Yeah, my name is, this is Molly Klein's Stolen Valor. This is Red Kahina's Stolen Valor. With Stolen Valor series, we track down every USAID scumbag who's pretending to be a freedom fighter. I get loads of these phony fake communists who they're associated with Kropo Cop House Rock. Sir, get over here. Get over here. Sir, why are you wearing the YPG uniform?
Sometimes I'll wear the pants when I have to go to base.
Who is your commander? Did you ask permission to the Lion Bashar al-Assad or the Lion's brother, Maher al-Assad, to enter Syria?
Yeah, I had to. They gave me my new patch all I did was...
Sir, are you working for Kropo Bieberkopf?
It's called I have all my shit at home, so I don't really give a fuck what y'all saying, y'all.
Sir...
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. This is Will here. Can you hear me?
I can.
Hey, this is Felix. Can you hear me?
Unfortunately, yes.
Before we officially get started, how would you like to be attributed on air?
At this point, I don't really give a shit. Brace is fine.
Brace?
Okay.
Brace.
Rashid's fine as well.
Okay, Rashid.
Rashid Wallace. Got it.
Rashid. It's the shittiest name. It's like no one else here has named it. Everyone else has like cool names that mean like liberation and like struggle. Mine is just like an Arabic name.
They actually name everyone after NBA players from the 90s. All those names are Kurdish. Latrell Sprewell is Kurdish.
Hello, friends. It's a special episode with a very special guest. I'm Will. I'm here with Felix. And to introduce him, I will do so by also misquoting Celine and saying, "War is heck." We're here with Piss Pig Granddad. What's going on, man?
I'm doing great, man.
You know him as Piss Pig Granddad, the greatest success story of Twitter, in my opinion. But we'll call you Rashid or Brace for the interview. I just want to say I'm a little annoyed because technically we've been scooped by Rolling Stone, but did they fuck up your article as bad as they did the one about us?
Oh, it's pretty fucking ridiculous, man. They just kind of made up my biography, which is tight because I've literally done nothing in my life but jack off before I came here. But yeah, they call me a low life punk in it.
You're like you're actually in that. I like that article because it's like you're Neo. And you woke up in the pod and landed in Zion, in Kurdistan.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely trying to make this a new Zion.
Can you stop bullets?
No.
Well, I mean, you there's always room for improvement.
So, what can you tell us about where you are right now?
I am in what you would call the rear right now. I spent about 3 months on the front on operation, and I am back for some advanced training, which sucks. Don't ever do any sort of training, but advanced training really fucking sucks.
What kind of advanced training? What's the advanced level?
There's a rumor that at the end they just make us wear a helmet and they just shoot us. I don't know if they're just fucking with me. But we have to like crawl. There's a lot of crawling. They threw bombs at us yesterday and made us like get down so we wouldn't be hit by them.
I assume you meant to shoot you in the helmet just so you can have the experience of what it's like to get your bell rung like that? Or do you mean to just shoot you?
Yeah, there's just like a bunch of helmets with bullet holes in them. They're not holes, dents. And I asked what they were for, and that's what they told me. But yeah, just a lot of crawling. I've been crawling a lot. It's like commando training.
By the end of the training, what is your accuracy stat, stamina stat, dexterity stat, and vehicle skill going to look like? Are you going to be able to like have the flying skill?
I can probably lift anything.
Wow.
Upper body strength, including me. So one of the things they do is just make us hold our gun like in the shooting position for like 15 minutes. It fucking sucks. It's awful.
Like I said, war is heck.
Yeah, I'm an extremely weak man, like morally and physically, and this is not helping.
Yeah, but when you get to the next level, it's going to be easier. You're going to be happy that you grinded away, and you're finally going to be able to unlock special weapons.
Well, the thing is, when I was in training, there was this fucking guy that deserted from the French Foreign Legion to come here, and he told me, like, in all seriousness, he took me aside and was just like, you know, war, like, they'll tell you a bunch of different shit, but it is exactly like a video game.
It is. This guy rules.
He's like, you can just shoot everything.
Well, as Jizza said, I'm trapped in a deadly video game with just one man. But sort of, I wanted to ask you, like, just in a broader sense, maybe for people who don't know or who aren't familiar, could you just give us, a general sense of, like, what is the YPG? Like, who are they? Where are they?
Yes. Okay. Well, I'm in Syria, as the YPG is too, in an area north Syria, which they call Rojava. Rojava actually means west in Kurdish. It's like West Kurdistan. Kurdistan's, like, technically in four parts. It's in Iran, Iraq, Turkey, and Syria. And this is actually the shittiest part. Definitely the shittiest part. But when the whole sort of Syrian, that beautiful Arab Spring kicked off, and the FSA really started going, the Assad regime kind of just left, and the Kurds kind of just took over. It's a mostly Kurdish area. There is an organization that is fraternal to us, but of course to disavow any connections, called the PKK, the Kurdistan Workers Party, or Workers Party of Kurdistan. And they have a couple guns, which I guess they let us borrow. And yeah, so they sort of like, they had the region as like sort of a de facto and autonomous zone until ISIS got up here and things got real, real fucked up in about 2012, 2013. And there was a lot, they lost a lot of territory until it was basically the size of like the Bay Area. And then after that, they slowly regained it. It was this big battle for Kobani. And yeah, a lot of fighters came from other parts of Kurdistan, if you know what I mean. And yeah, now it's technically, they call it libertarian socialism. But it's pretty much a Stalinist state, which is fucking tight. turns out that's good as hell.
Well, I wanted to ask you about what life is like in Rojava. But before that, you said, like, you're in the rear now after spending 3 months at the front. So what can you tell us about, like you said, it's a process that, like, they lost a great deal of territory as sort of ISIS moved in, and then it was a process of taking it back bit by bit. So what can you tell us about what that campaign has been like this summer or up until now?
Well, so when I got here, I thought we were going to go for the city called Al-Bab, which is sort of like the last, it's kind of ISIS's corridor to Turkey. There's three cantons in Rojava. That's called Jizir, which I'm in right now, which is tight because it has jizz in the name.
It's
Kobani
the
Canton
province.
And this thing called Afrin Canton. Yeah, just tight.
In Afrin Canton, they call him Brother Brace.
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck a canton is. It's like a county. That was the last Al-Bab. If we took Al-Bab, it would be like the last city we would need to connect all three cantons. And Afrin, apparently, which is kind of the one like the furthest west and disconnected from everybody, they have like fucking Abrams tanks and like, you know, Katyushas and shit. We have like one tank, so everyone was really stoked to connect the cantons, and it kind of didn't happen. Turkish army moved in, FSA and the Syrian army moved in, so that's kind of on hold, and we're just going for Raqqa. What I was involved in was the first phase of the operation. Actually, my gun crew actually fired the first shots of the Raqqa operation. We took this town called Tel Simon. It was like kind of a major little farming town, and it was a first step into like an eight-part process where we're just going to encircle Raqqa and then just die there.
For anyone who's following you on Twitter, I mean, we saw you were in sort of like a homemade armored vehicle, just as sort of the, I guess, tip of the spear.
I went to like a heavy weapons debord first. A debord is like a platoon. I went to a heavy weapons debord first, thinking that like it would just be easier because I'm lazy. But instead, we just went on operation like the second day after I got there, out of getting out of the training. But it was, yeah, I was in the homemade tank for a little bit and on a 20.3 anti-aircraft gun attached to the back of a truck. I think they call them technicals in the West. But we call them douchkas here. Yeah. The tank was fucking wild, though, man. It's just concrete over a garbage truck.
Did it have an aux cord?
It did actually have an aux cord.
Yeah, it's the human right.
And this like kind of fat, like there's like a few people I met here that are like clearly deeply autistic, which is too cool. I am obviously too. But this one guy, we'd sleep in there every night, and this like one real kind of porky kid would simultaneously put his every finger he had in his mouth, in my mouth, and turn on like Kurdish music full blast at 3 a.m. to help him sleep.
There's nothing.
Did that help? How did that? Did that help you sleep?
Yeah, man. I love sucking on a finger.
You know, so you said that you've sort of stalled out in certain areas, but like overall, has the campaign against ISIS been successful from the YPG's view so far, or is there still more work to be done before you can even consider something like that?
The thing is, there's like three lines of defense around Raqqa, kind of like three major actual fortifications they have. We kind of just chased them to those, especially in my part. They mostly ran when we came. They would leave like four people in each little village, hiding in like snipers and stuff. But yeah, they're kind of withdrawing to that and then just mining everything. There's mostly mines out here. That's a thing to watch out for. And mines fucking suck, man. Those things aren't cool at all.
Well, actually, I can... I mean, I could give you a lot of advice, but on this specifically, I can give you some pretty good advice. If you press the you know, I don't know what system you're using, but if you press the crawl button, which I think is either X, square, or if you're on the Xbox, that's A, you can take the mine and put it in your inventory, but you have to crawl over it.
Well, that's why you've been doing all this crawling. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
we actually have these like sabotage squads that are all, it's mostly women because their hands are smaller. But they do that. It fucking sucks for them, man. It's a dangerous job.
Going back now, I mean, like, this is where you are now. But I think a lot of people want to know, how the fuck did you end up in Syria and why?
Well, I tried to join al-Nusra. but they weren't having me. There's something about Jews. I don't know. In 2012, I started reading about the PKK a lot, who, again, have no connection to us, and getting real kind of juiced on it. I mean, it seemed like one of the like kind of most effective armed struggle groups of the left, actually probably the most effective. So I kind of like looked at it more and more, and then I read this insane article about these like dipshits that came out here, like these kind of Christian guys that came out here to join the YPG and got freaked out because they're communists.
Oh, right. They were sort of these like special ops American guys who were like thought of themselves as crusaders and just wanted to go back to like Iraq or whatever and take up the fight again.
Yeah, they call themselves the Sons of Liberty.
Yeah, yeah, and all like the Christians out here and shit. Like there's like Christian militias we have, but they're all like, they all have like swastikas and shit all over them. They're insane. They're not Westerners. They're Syrians, but they love Hitler. Like dudes will just have like swastika tattoos, swastikas drawn onto their rifles and stuff. Anyway, so I read about these dipshits, and I figured that I am, of course, like I haven't played video games in a while, but I remember being pretty good at them. So I figured I could just do that out here. No, but I really wanted to like to join because I don't know. I mean, maybe it's one part like me just trying, like feeling empathetic towards because it's a real fucked up here. And another part just like wanting to actually fight and see if I can. And they said, okay. They're trying to bring mostly left wing people out here now. There's like some apolitical people, but for the most part, everyone's pretty left. So I started emailing them and eventually they said, come out. So I came out. I flew to Sulaymaniyah in Iraq. Got taken to a safe house where this guy like sits me down at a table there. And I'm real freaked out because I don't know who the fuck he is really. And I'm in Iraq and he's got like a pistol and shit. but he starts telling me that like, if I want to do something, that I have to like focus all my mental energy on it. Because if I focus enough mental energy on it, that energy becomes actually material and that I have to also make a dream board to get what I want.
That's
and
the
I realized
secret.
That he was just fucking explaining the secret to me. But yeah, he actually gave me a copy of the secret that I took with me here.
Oh my God.
just quickly threw away.
Positive thinking, Rashid. Positive thinking always. Okay, so like, yeah, so you get there, you go from a safe house in Iraq to where?
To the mountains, I'll just say.
Okay.
You can be
vague.
Sweet camp in the mountains. Yeah, I mean, I can't really be more specific because I don't really remember the name of it. But yeah, to the mountains in Iraq, and then some fellas and some helpful people. They took us over. That's what they call me. They named me Rashid because everyone needs like a different, you know, code name. They took us to this river, and it's about one in the morning, maybe two, and we have to cross the border into Syria. Like, we have to avoid the Peshmerga, the Iraqi Kurds, like kind of like armed force, because the border's closed. You can't go across. So we had to spend like maybe 8 hours crawling, and then like blowing up an inflatable boat we got from the bushes, and crossing this river. And there was like all these helicopters and stuff. It was very confusing because I figured out we only went like 5 kilometers, but it took us 8 hours. And when we got there, these guys changed out of their pajamas and some different uniforms. And then I was in Syria.
So when you're there, like, if you're in, where did you train? Were you in Rojava? I mean, So I guess what I mean is, like, what were the people, your comrades like, and what is life like there, like on the ground? Like what did it seem like to you coming there, and what's like this sort of lived day-to-day life experience like?
Well, in the academy, it was all Westerners, but it was a month-long course, like 2 weeks, pretty much all day ideology and language training, and then 2 weeks of weapons training, where we got to fire 12 bullets from a Kalashnikov, and like 3 from a sniper rifle. But it was pretty fun. I mean, it was like a dumbass group of people. I mean, you gotta be really fucking stupid to come to Syria. But there was one kind of like the ex-Foreign Legion guy who kind of like helped us out with the training, and then everyone just kind of split to different platoons. But life is, there's a few different versions of it. There's like civilian life, which is pretty normal. I mean, everyone's kind of poor, but like it's not that bad, honestly. There's the PYD, like our civilian wing. It's socialist, so they cover like a lot of food, cover fuel for people. They help people out with housing. So for the people that can't afford, like, you know, like people who aren't refugees, essentially, and the refugees we have from the rest of Syria, they put them up, they feed them. That's pretty well taken care of, except for there's an embargo, so they can't really get new things. But the party life is really, really, really ascetic. Like, they don't have any personal property whatsoever. In fact, like, if I ever, like, looked at my phone or anything like that, they'd just be like, capitalist, put that away. Which I tried to explain to them that, like, phones themselves aren't capitalist, but didn't really work. I mean, everything's communal. There's no real, like, there's commanders and stuff, but, like, they have to do the same shit we do. So it's a bit jarring, honestly. But like, I mean, their whole mentality behind it is that like you can't build a socialist society without living like a completely socialist life. So everything is shared. There's no, I mean, if someone wants something you have, like, you're pretty much gonna give it to them. And there's like a lot of like self-criticism sessions, which aren't so great. But they're not like North Korea or like Cambodia or anything. Everyone takes turns cooking, including the commanders. Everyone takes turns like doing watch. It's pretty fucking, I guess, egalitarian. Even though there's like, we have nothing, you know, people don't have like any personal property except for books.
So, like, it's a culture that is basically, you know, when you say like has built socialism basically from scratch under incredibly dire circumstances. But like, I guess my question is, what is like the sort of socialist ideology you've given us sort of like a sense of how that's lived there. But what is that like? What is it like building socialism without any of the sort of postmodern cultural context of the West? Or is there some of that?
There's some of that. I mean, some people have phones and stuff. I mean, there's internet, there's TV. But it's a lot of just like, especially in the party, like there's if you're in the party, you're in it basically for life. So there's in that sense there, it's really different. It's pretty much you just sit around and talk and work on things and like help each other do shit. I don't really know how to explain it, but it's wild. Outside of that, there's like a pretty heavily involved civilian wing of the party that like builds, for instance, they have women build like women's houses in every like little village where just women meet and men can't go. Which, of course, ladies, I am completely in favor of. That's another aspect of like the sexual relations between men and women, but not like actually fucking, but like just the way that women are treated now is, I think, from what I hear, extremely different than before. Like there were honor killings. People had like several wives. And now, like, if people hear about like you doing an honor killing, they'll just come and kill you. It's illegal to marry more than one person now, et cetera. But yeah, it's really different from the West in a lot of good ways, in some ways that are kind of confusing.
Such as?
It's pretty much illegal to jack off here.
Wow.
Whoa. Wow. Okay.
You really are in paradise.
So let me just tell you, I'm the biggest criminal in this fucking country.
I can imagine how those, struggle sessions are going with you.
Actually, for the entire first month that I was on the front, like during the first month of operation, not once. I didn't spill a drop of my seed. And I'll tell you what, buddy, I was thrumming with power.
Listeners, take note. You can apply this in your regular day-to-day life just here in America. As far as, like, you know, you... What are the other Westerners who have come here to fight like? Is there sort of a common thread? Are they mostly like, where are they mostly from? What are they like? Do you relate to them, or what's that like?
Well, so at first, again, like there was mostly just like psychopaths that wanted to come kill people, but they turned out to be, you know, fucking nutcases. So they kind of all got kicked out. There was this one guy named Tim the Cannibal who.
How did he get that
like
name?
Once during an operation. Well, let me tell you. Once during an operation, they had blown up an ISIS guy with a RPG. And the guy was pretty well cooked, so he just picked up his foot and just started fucking eating it.
Benihana up in this bitch. And
fucking hell.
In his defense, we don't get a lot of protein, but he kind of freaked some of the party members out here. And he would drink blood. And once a comrade was wounded, and he ended up kind of eating a little bit of that guy while he was still alive. And after that, was arrested.
If I could just have listeners imagine Will's face right now. You just, if only you could see it.
Actually, this is funny to me.
Now it's pretty much like, I'd say 75% left-wing people. Like the people I'm with now, we have like me, another American communist, two French anarchists, one of whom is a blankist. Which I didn't think was real. And there's like a bunch of French Maoists in the platoon next to ours, which is like a Maoist platoon. So it's mostly left-wing people, and then just some like pretty much apolitical vets who almost uniformly have been kicked out of the U.S. military.
In a bit of recent news, I did see you respond to this briefly on Twitter, but I wanted to ask you about that... just god-awful piece that was in The Nation by that guy Roy Guttman. I know you saw that, right?
Amazing. Like, amazing. Amazing.
What is going on with that? Like, could you maybe describe, like, what the... It's hard to pin down what, like, the thesis of this article is, but it basically was saying that the YPG was basically the kind of moral equivalent of the sectarian Sunni groups that are also in Syria, and sort of accused the YPG of like ethnic cleansing or something.
Well, so there was this like fucking bullshit. I can't remember if it was Amnesty International or Human Rights. I think it was Human Rights Watch report that came out a few years ago that it was basically like full of bullshit. I mean, all their shit around this war has been like pretty insane, but this was pretty nuts. And it like accused us of like blowing up villages and like bulldozing houses and stuff like that, and like and having child soldiers, which, you know, I mean, what's your definition of a child? Mine's under 14, in which case we don't have any. But Roy's piece, it seemed like it was kind of based on that. And I call him Roy because we're obviously closely linked now. But it's mostly just like, I mean, he wrote it from Istanbul, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It said that, like, the YPG's biggest battle they ever fought was in Kobani.
Right.
When the city was pretty much destroyed. And then a year later, about 50 Dash snuck in wearing our uniform, like the YPG, like the digital camo we wear, and ended up perpetrating like a huge massacre. And it turned out to be like a 250-person Dash kind of like group came in. And he essentially accuses the YPG of just like knowing that was going to happen and then just letting it happen. For reasons that he doesn't really make clear, and making people leave the battle area. It's insane. Like, of course we make civilians leave.
Well, yeah, like specifically about the Koban example, it was like he seemed to accuse the YPG of like making people in the outlying villages like withdraw into behind fortified positions, and I'm just like, isn't that just like war though? Like, what else are you gonna do?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we've evacuated tons of civilians because, like, there's, like, bombs and stuff here.
Yeah, what's the alternative? Just know? Leave them there?
But in the article, he not only accuses us of working for Iranian intelligence, which is insane because the PKK, I mean, which, we have no connection with, they have an Iranian wing that's fighting the Iranian government. But he accuses us of working for Assad and working for the Americans, and then also for some reason, like, I think working for somebody else too. I can't remember who it was, like Russia at some point. It's like absurd. Like, he says that we handed over towns, like 300 villages to ISIS, which is, I can assure you, not true.
But like, what the, like, why is this in the Nation, and why are they publishing this? I won't ask you to project motivations onto them, but it was an absurd piece.
People will just fucking publish anything about Syria. I mean, look at Jacobin, for example. I mean, they published like two. For some reason, Trotskyists think like the FSA is like the fucking Red Army.
Dude, it is.
Instead of just like a bunch of like Salafist mercenaries, like they published the most bullshit things about Rojava or about the Syrian civil war. I think, like, it's just, like, a thing that's going on, and people kind of want to get in on it. I mean, Roy Gutman had fucking, like, co-authored a bunch of pieces with Michael Weiss, you know?
Woo!
Okay, so that's how you know he's telling the truth.
Like, the SDF, which is, like, what we're technically underneath, even though we control them, actually, they are almost entirely Arab. Like, we have more Arab fighters than Kurdish fighters. In the YPG itself, in the PKK, which, again, we have no connection with, especially not me, there are tons of Arabs. When we move people out of towns, we move people out of towns because we are, like, first of all, checking them for mines, and then also fighting in them. Like, for instance, when I was leaving the front, like, we were actually letting people move back into the town that we had previously evacuated. And the first night we did, Dash sent five suicide bombers in with them. And actually one exploded my old Nocta, but they didn't kill anybody. Nocta's a base. They didn't kill a single person but themselves. But, yeah, like, it's not – it's absurd. It's, and the thing is, too, it's not like a completely Kurdish force at all. I mean, we had, like, a bunch of Arab dudes in my last Tabor, and that was all Qadro people, like people who are in the YPG for the rest of their fucking life. Yeah. So, like, this shit is just, like – these are just, like, people who thought the FSA was a good idea. And they just won't back down from that.
Well, you talked about like what life was like for you and your comrades, but many of whom have come from elsewhere to join this fight. But I want to ask you, what's your impression of the enemy aside from what you can see through, you know, a gun sight? Do you have any idea of the, I mean, obviously they're despicable.
I mean,
but
yeah. Yeah, ISIS is insanely bad. I'm going to go out here and say that. Turns out they're not good, which, you know, really shocked me when I got here. I will say this. They are very fucking good at what they do. Like, a lot of them are. They train, I guess, really hard because they're some pretty hardy soldiers. And they have a lot of, like, there's different things you got to watch out for. There's, like, Chechen snipers, which are, like, notorious here for being, like, they kill a lot of us. And they're mines. That's really the main thing that we take casualties from right now. It's mines. I mean, for instance, like, we were in, like a little farming village, like, me and two other guys checking it for people. And we'd heard that there were mines there, and we were walking, and we saw a bunch. We didn't defuse them. We just kind of put markers near them so that the sabotage squads could. But it turns out there was over 100 fucking mines in, like, a three-building little farmhouse, a little farm area. And actually, one of the guys I was with stepped on one of them, but it didn't work. But, they mine, like, they'll set out, like, a case of energy drinks, which are – we drink a lot of, I'll say that. And they have nicotine in them, which is fucking tight. And they'll mine a case of energy drinks and just put it on the road. And some dumbass will just pick it up and blow himself to pieces.
Virgil, Texas.
yeah. No, this shit is great, though. It has fucking nicotine in it, man. It makes you – it's like our Captagon.
have you copped any of that shit?
I haven't copped any Captagon myself. But my boy Mikhail, this Kurdish dude from Istanbul, he told me that when he was on operation in Minbij, which is like our last major battle, he found a suitcase full of Captagon, and pretending not to know what it was, he took a little. He was like, it was like ecstasy, but all my blood turned to stone.
Sounds great.
But I keep hearing these stories from people that, like, you'll shoot, like, they'll charge at you, especially these Chinese, these Uyghurs, they have a lot of Uyghurs. And Daesh is like a weird racial hierarchy where they'll, like, send them to die first. Like, Arabs are the top, and there's some, like, hierarchy underneath that, but the Chinese are at the bottom. So they'll just send these Uyghurs out with, like, pistols and knives and, like, a couple grenades. But if you shoot them, blood just, like, comes out in, like, a straight, like, from, like, a fucking movie or something, just comes out, like, in a straight line, and it'll keep running. But yeah, Captagon seems great.
So that's the enemy, but let me ask you, like, what about everyone else, right? Everything, people who just have to, like, live in Syria in the middle of all this, like you said, like, you evacuate people and then you see them come back into these villages that you've evacuated or liberated. Like, what is that? Like, what is your impression of them and what is their impression of you?
Well, I can't speak to exactly what their impression of us is. I mean, living under ISIS seems, I will say again, pretty bad.
Like fucking hell on earth, probably.
Yeah. Like, for instance, like, there's in every... even the littlest towns we went to, there would be, like, these cages for people out on the sidewalks. You know, and they would, like, black out every face that was, like, printed on any product or anything. People seem pretty fucking happy about it when we come. It sucks. People do get bummed when we evacuate them, obviously. But then usually, like, we'll see them a few days later and they won't give a shit anymore because we let them come back as quickly as possible. And obviously, we're not going to let them stay there while people are shooting at us. But it's fucking hard to live in Syria, man. Like, it's like anybody who's still here is like, and people even who left, it's got to be, they're tough as shit. It's really, I mean, there's essentially, like, there's probably going to be a famine within the next couple of years because of the embargo if the things keep going the way they're going. So people just naturally have to live a pretty communal lifestyle. And it's tough, I think, on people. I mean, there's no electricity. A lot of times there's no clean water, no food. That was, like, our big, like, for the last 2 weeks before I came here, we were on the defensive, where we were just, like, you know, a fortified position. And pretty much what we did each day, we would just go to the, like, the logistics area we have, make a bunch of food, and then just, like, give it to the people nearby us. Because, I mean, they had nothing, like, literally just the clothes on their back. And these, like, broken houses, pretty much. I mean, Daesh would just blow up places before they left. So yeah, it's a hard scrabble fucking existence here, man. And anybody who can do it is tougher than I am.
Felix, you have any questions?
So yeah, just relating a little bit to recent events and sort of the future over there a bit more with this Russia deal between the Kurds and Russians coming up, because there's kind of a high likelihood of America selling out the Kurds, what with Trump being sort of like a disinterested shithead and Flynn being the last guy to talk to him, and Flynn basically being a paid AKP agent at this point.
Yeah. He's like Lindsay Lohan, but, you know.
What, is he going to start tweeting, the world is bigger than five?
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, America is absolutely 100% going to abandon the Kurds for Turkey. I mean, everyone knows that. And, you know, like, even, like, kind of like the most, like, farmer-type people that we are in our platoons, like, were well aware that, like, they couldn't trust the Americans. Because it wouldn't be the first time America has stabbed the Kurds in the back. And they think of America as being allied with Turkey, which they are, and allied with the Iraqi Kurds, who they hate. So everyone's kind of getting ready for that. And actually, in Afrin, the Syrian army and the Russian army, or the Russian Air Force, kind of worked with the Kurds over there. And I think there's going to be a peace deal. I mean, I think the peace deal is going to be between us, they may be Turkey and the SAA, and I don't, or the Syrian government. And I think that after that, Turkey will just attack. Everyone. I mean, they shell us all the fucking time. They shell civilian areas all the time. My friend was at like a protest on the border where they just opened fire and killed a few people, which wasn't reported like at all. And actually, a couple nights ago, I saw them just shooting a fucking, I don't know what it was. It seemed like a pretty big gun at people trying to cross the border. So I think that they're going to attack us after that, especially after the referendum on April 6th, I think 16th in Turkey. So everyone here is just hoping that the civil war spreads north.
So what do you think the outcome of that would be, though, if Turkey attacks, given that this would be in a large part a Russian brokered deal, and the way that Turkey has sort of had to kowtow to Russian demands because of how important Russia is to their economy?
Yeah. I mean, Turkey got cucked.
Right, yeah. After they shot down that jet, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like one of those right-wing guys who loves Putin now. Actually, no, he can suck my – he can fucking blow me. It's – I mean, Russia took the step the other day of, like, declaring that the PKK and the YPG – I think actually just the YPG wasn't a terrorist organization, which is a good first step for a peace deal. So far in the past couple years, we haven't been invited to any of, like – the kind of major peace talks that have been happening. But at this point, I mean, there's after ISIS is done, there's really not much more that can happen. The FSA is just pretty much gray wolves, like who are pretending to be Salafists and actual Salafists. But there's really not that many of them anymore. There's been sporadic fighting the past couple of days between the Turkish army and the Syrian army and the Russian Air Force. I think that's kind of calmed down. So, I mean, we're hoping, I think they're hoping for like a semi-autonomous zone, not like in the KRG, like they'll still be part of like Syria, but they'll kind of have their own institutions. It'll be sort of like dual power.
It would be like Chechnya or Dagestan in Russia.
Yeah. So, I mean, I honestly don't know. I have a feeling that we're going to get fucked, but there are a lot of people under arms here now, and there's a lot of friends up north too. So if they actually come in here with tanks and stuff like that, which they have done in Afrin. I mean, there's a guy from California who got killed in an airstrike by Turks about last month, Michael Israel. So I don't know what will happen, but it'll be pretty fucking bloody, especially after the referendum. I mean, Erdogan can do whatever he wants after that.
So, I mean, like if the smart money is that, you know, things will play out according to history and the United States will – sell out the Kurds. But technically right now, what is the status of relationship between the YPG and the US government and military, if any?
Oh, there is one. It's an insanely cynical one, but there is one. We get air support from them, which we call in on tablets, which are otherwise used to play like fucking bubble pop or whatever. I'm not even kidding, man. It's fucked up. So right now they give the YPG, they don't give anything to. Like, not, we don't get anything from them. They get no training. We get no guns. We get no ammunition, nothing. But the SDF, on the other hand, because it is a new organization that doesn't have any ties to the PKK, they get some guns and some training and some, I don't think they get any money. Actually, I don't think they even get any training, but they get some guns from them. It's going to be pretty bad when they do sort of leave. But it's also pretty bad that they're here. They don't really help on the ground that much. I kind of got grilled by a CIA guy my first day out of the academy. He was just like walking around where I was. He like, sat down. I was like, "What's your name, son? Like, where are you from? How come you're here? Like, are they giving you any bomb training, anything like that?" which I said no, obviously, and which is true, they haven't.
What was his name? John Q. Langley?
Dude, no. But he was just like a group of these like bearded operator fucking guys who, of course, you know, being an operator myself.
We can smell our own.
Completely yeah. ignored us, but this like one like pudgy like Philip Seymour Hoffman looking motherfucker who came over and like really tried to like give us this like down home talk, but I was just like, man, I'm fucking Canadian. I don't know what you're talking about. And the other guy was just pretending to be Kurdish. but yeah, there's like a few of them. It's pretty tense relations sometimes. Like the commanders are cool with them a lot, like, or at least they seem to be cool with them. But a lot of the like kind of the rank and file are definitely not. But so we'll see where it goes. I don't think it's going to get passed. I at this point, I think that they're going to let Turkey, like from the news in the past few days, I think Turkey is going to try to come in and try to take Raqqa themselves, which is fine with me. Honestly, I think it's going to be a fucking bloodbath if we try to do it. And it's going to be a little while to completely encircle it, but it's there's a lot of people there. But yeah, so there are Americans here, and or actually mostly British people I've seen, and they seem incredibly uneasy. I'll say that they seem very uneasy because a lot of the we get ideology lessons a lot, and they are not exactly pro-American, and people see America as just like helping out Turkey as well. You know, very anti-NATO sentiments here.
Have you guys thought about this? Like, if you do end up doing the Raqqa offensive. Okay, so you get your, instead of like, you know, picking between the stealth or the assault kit, you get the balance kit. You do a side mission so you can upgrade to a silent sniper rifle, and you quick save when you're right outside of Raqqa. So if you die, you don't have to travel back to the outskirts of Raqqa to start the mission.
Well, here's the thing. We actually have this thing called a Zagros, which is made out of a 14.5 anti-aircraft gun barrel, and they just make them into sniper rifles.
Oh, that fucking rules.
Dude, and then they have another one that's made out of a 20.3 barrel. It's like 5 meters long. And you can only fire like a few times. But it can shoot like 15 miles. Some insane shit like that. So I think we should just get a bunch of guys to surround it just with those and just keep shooting. And eventually, like, we'll just get al-Baghdadi. I mean, there's not that many people in Raqqa.
Yeah. So it's like a homemade anti-materiel rifle.
Yeah, we have a lot of kind of homemade stuff like that, dude. You can, man. People just make it in the mountains and shit. Not that we have any connection to the mountains, but sometimes people make them there. Yeah, we have one in the armory here, but they won't let me shoot it because you can only shoot it like 3 times.
But what if it's your birthday?
You know, it was my birthday, and when I was in the academy. And they let me shoot the Dragunov one extra time.
I remember that picture. We were like, oh, he got the Dragunov, but
you should. Dude, it's like I kept getting upgraded with weapons. Like I had the Dragunov in the academy, and then when I got to the Tabor, I got like this. Like I got to shoot the 14.5 and the 20.3. And then after that, they gave me which they didn't give me any training because that's incredibly illegal for me to get training on it. But I did get an RPG for about 2 months
that
turned out not to work very well.
Yeah, I mean, official military expert of the show, Brad Thor, has referred to the RPG as a flying IUD.
Yeah, we got to get some of those, man. They really work. I mean, those things are big. Yeah, I mean, no, like these the vehicle-borne ones, they put them in fucking in APCs. They put them in tanks recently. They are really hard to blow up. I will say that. But I did see a lady shoot one with a fucking a PKM, like a machine gun, and she got the guy, and they just It was just a fucking explosive vehicle out on the road for about 4 days.
Rashid, my last question for you is, of course, about all the dogs in Syria. Are they good boys?
Yeah. Oh, completely. There's no such thing as a bad one. incredibly good boys. The thing is, there's like a lot of shepherds around here, and they just have like a shit ton of dogs, but now like all the shepherds are dead because pretty much everyone here is dead. So there's just dogs everywhere. It's kind of unnerving, but they seem to be pretty nice. They're all good boys. We got ducks at this place.
Wait, I have one more question, and that's, are you going to go on Molly Klein's podcast when it comes out?
Is that real?
Yeah. The Red Kahina cast is coming soon.
So her theory about me is, first of all, I work for the CIA, which is true. I do work for
them.
Obviously, they couldn't pass up such a good opportunity as myself. And despite my leftist views, I am a patriot. like a certain Jason Bourne. I work for the CIA, but I'm also a U.S. Marine PSYOP, which is true as well. There's a street named after me in San Francisco, which there is a street with my same name, but it's just also like a pretty common name, Belden. And I'm also her new theory is that I'm an heir that owns a yacht and like a millions of dollars in stock portfolio, which I don't, yeah. But I'm not sure.
I thought that was her.
It's literally her.
Like, her dad made money off of like chicks fingering themselves on fucking like HBO or whatever. Like, my dad is like a normal portly old man who like looks like John Lovitz and still has to work at like 73.
Well, yeah. The Red Kahina cast is coming, and she'll be transcribing this episode, I'm sure.
Yeah.
This is like the fucking jackpot for her, believe me.
It's just going to be about this.
Yeah.
It's just going to be about this.
He's like by far our most dedicated listener. She knows every single bit from the show.
By the way, shout out to my girlfriend, Jen. fan of the show.
Yeah, one of the few Lady Grey Wolves. Well, actually, there are a lot. There are a lot now, Lady Grey Wolves. But she was one of the first.
No, I mean, yeah, it's. I can't wait to get back. It's going to be awful.
When do you get back? Or can you say?
I'm probably leaving in a couple months, I think.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, no.
Yeah. I'm leaving like a couple months. Yeah, and it's going to be awful. I'm going to get detained. I'm going to go to prison.
But if you get out, you can see Star Wars Rogue One.
Yeah.
Well, I'll also be a vet, which I will proclaim like extremely time I go for like pennies.
Congratulations on stealing all this fucking valor.
He earned it. He actually did earn it.
Yeah, all the valor to piss pig is what I said.
It's cool. Like all these fucking dipshit Marines have to like go through like months of boot camp where like people like, you know, like it's like a British like private school. Like people just like sodomize them and yell all the time.
All you had to do was sleep with some guy's fingers in your fucking mouth.
Yeah. I just had to send an email and fucking easy. Now I'm a troop.
Well, Rashid, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us. And I genuinely want to say, please stay safe. And though, as I think you would be the first to admit, I think you're fucking insane, but also quite brave for doing what you've done.
I'm actually just really stupid.
Bravery, stupidity, I think it's a fine line.
I definitely crossed that line.
Brace, you know, before we go, I just want to say thank you for your service, and you are welcome for mine.
I will give you half of my valor when I get back.
All right, you can have some of mine. It's someone else's anyway.
Seriously, though, be safe and just get home soon.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, and if this is a paid episode, I would like a cut.
It's not. It's free.
Oh, fuck. Kiss me goodbye.